All right, here's a little bit of music, and then we'll be set.
Or will we?
Hello, and welcome to the Sprocket Podcast, where we are simplifying the good life. My name is Brock Dettis.
And I'm Aaron Flores, and you know it's the Sprocket Podcast when we screw up the beginning.
We are the show that brings you somewhat irreverent conversations about the intricacies of thinking locally with a global perspective and enjoying the best that life has to offer along the way, including gin and tonics, because it's Cinco de Mayo.
The official drink of Cinco de Mayo.
That's right.
Gin and tonics. Oh, yeah. You all thought it might include tequila, but it's not.
But you were wrong.
You were wrong. It's gin and tonic. Look it up. I have nothing to add. I was going to like what do the whole spiel.
And what do we usually cover on the show, sir?
Covering bicycling, trains and transit, simpler living, and today, what should we call it?
All kinds of advocacy and love for the bicycle.
All right.
Yeah. We're here with Jerry Zalata. Good. I forgot to ask you before we started.
That's fine.
How do you like to be known publicly?
Oh, well, you know,
Dr. Z?
Dr. Z is fine. I've worked with Jerry Norquist for such a long time. It's sort of always been the Jerry and Jerry show.
Oh, there we go.
But Dr. Z, Jerry Z is probably the most common.
Okay. Excellent. Calling. So we give you Jerry Z of fame and fortune.
Well, thank you.
Thank you for joining us tonight. We appreciate it.
You're welcome.
Yeah. Aaron, we did a move by bike. Not yesterday. I was going to say yesterday, but 2 days ago.
Oh, okay. I've dubbed this weekend the Portland as fuck weekend.
Quite a bit so.
Was this a Gladys move?
Yes. Gladys Bikes.
Yeah, how did it go?
It went really well,
I
thought.
It was badass. But before the Gladys bike move,
there
was also, the night before, there was also the bike farm party.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, I was there for the very beginning of it.
Yeah.
I had like three parties to hit that
night.
I
was there from beginning till end.
Yeah, and that worked out well for you.
It worked out really good. They had the game showing because, you know, there was that big game.
Blazers.
Between.
How about that local sports team?
Those sports teams that I follow.
How about the scores?
But so here's the thing, though. I don't know if you were around for that. They had the game playing, but, you know, of course, you don't want that inside the whole bike farm party because, you know, the focus should be on the bike farm.
Oh, so did they put the game outside?
It was on a projection screen outside.
Really?
And the projection screen was powered by a bicycle.
Oh, I think I heard about this. Yeah.
Yeah, it was pretty awesome.
Because Food Not Bomb showed up to help with dinner at the party.
And I thought that's who was riding this bike.
Okay. That's who I thought it was, too.
It was these two cats from San Fran were up hanging out at the bike farm.
Oh, really?
And just totally hooked it up for them.
Okay. So did they bring the generators with them?
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
That's kind of a cool deal. And did they come up specifically for the bike farm party?
No, they were coming up, I don't know, just
for the Blazer game.
And yeah.
So the bicycle set up to the generators were facing the screen.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
There we go.
Yeah. It was just one bike.
Oh, okay.
That was generating the power for it. And every now and then, like, the screen would freeze, but.
Right.
Yeah. What was great about that night, though, was this all, like, sort of happened at the same time as the Blazers winning. The bike farm reaches and surpasses their goal by, like, selling one of their, like, best frames.
Okay. Of fundraising?
Yeah. Their goal of fundraising. And then because they also share some space with a beer distributor.
Oh.
The beer distributor came by because he was, like, all happy that the Blazers won.
Right.
Opened his garage and just started, like, grabbing flats of beers and giving it to everybody at the party.
So it was raining all of a sudden.
Yeah. So there was a lot of dancing going on.
That's awesome.
At that point, you know.
That's fabulous. I wish I had been there for that part.
Yeah.
Mine like a savage.
You missed out. And, like, a bunch of us made out like bandits. You
really?
Know?
People were making out all over the place?
Like, I don't mean bandits? Like, no. Not like, you know, like getting prizes. Not
yes.
Not making out like, you know, kissing and then putting on like
not a
masks
fun way.
And anyway.
So you were in this raffle. You had tickets.
Yeah. I won $80 to a tattoo parlor.
Right. And you're no stranger to tattoos.
I'm not.
You're a fan of
the
ink.
I've been wanting another tattoo, but I couldn't justify the purchase.
Right.
There we go.
Now you can't justify not getting a tattoo.
No, in fact, I'd be dumb not to.
Right. Does it expire at any point?
It does, actually. Okay. Like so in a month.
It's about time.
I gotta hurry up.
Well, that kind of forces your decision. Well, do you know what you're gonna get?
So I don't know if I want to say it out there because I'm afraid like people think this is such a great idea that they'll like do it.
Oh, okay.
And then my tattoo won't be original. Not that I probably am. I'm sure I'm not the only person who's thought of this. But then I'm also afraid of like any criticisms.
Oh, sure.
You know,
you don't have to say.
All right.
But we'll take suggestions. You could send them to the Sprocket Podcast. Probably on Twitter is the best forum for that.
Twitter
at Sprocket
us.
Podcast. What should Aaron get as a tattoo?
Serious inquiries only.
So just out of curiosity, what does $80 get you? Does that get you like an elbow?
Does it
get you like a forearm?
It'll probably get you like something on the inside of your wrist or something of that size.
Maybe. Okay.
You know,
like an inch square.
Yeah.
Wow.
Maybe a couple.
Tattoo's pretty expensive then.
Oh yeah.
I've never gotten one.
Well, it's by time generally and not by space. If you have colors, sometimes that also increase the cost.
At least
that's been my experience.
And if you have, if you have a very sparse design with a lot of like dotted lines or something like that, then you could get a very large area tattooed with very little ink.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. Economy, right?
Pointillism. You
know? Yes.
A tribute to 1900s.
Yes.
Well, Jerry, what would you get if you had $80 to spend at a tattoo parlor?
Oh,
remember, you'd be stupid not to.
I think I could get someone else's happiness by giving them the coupon.
You would buy someone else a tattoo.
I think I'd be happy to do that.
I think that's what I would do as well, because I've always wanted a tattoo. And matter of fact, back when this first was like a consideration, I thought, what would I do to get a really like original tattoo? And I've never really been like one of those guys that wants a huge dragon on his back or something like this. And so
you got to knock on my tattoo, huh?
Right. I've never seen this huge dragon. My apologies.
I'm just kidding.
I was searching my brain trying to remember, wait, does he have a huge dragon back tattoo?
Well,
the answer is no.
This is radio.
Right. I mean, no, I can totally see it. His shirt's off and he's got a huge dragon tattoo. I am very sorry for the slight. I wanted to get, before iPhones were a thing, I wanted to get like a series of tiles with little icon images of things that were important to me. And
intriguing.
I was going to get them tiled, you know, like maybe like four wide and then like, you know, eight down or something like that. And just choose a bunch of things that this is me. This is who I am.
Right,
but then
right.
The iPhone came out and now it would look like I had an iPhone on my arm. So I can't do that anymore. I mean, I could if I wanted to look like I had an iPhone on my arm, but I don't. So, yeah. And I'm also, I'm averse to pain. I don't really, everything I've heard about tattoos says that like people that have the experience, like the experience, would want to do it again.
Yes, very much so.
But it's just not a thing I'm into, I don't think. And I also, I'm not a huge jewelry guy. Like the only jewelry I wear is my wedding ring. So there's that. And that's kind of just because I have to. I mean,
Mr.
I love her. I'm glad we're together. But like, I'm not
band over there too.
Oh, right. And I guess I have like my TriMet and my Waterwell Project armbands.
Yeah.
But those come and go.
Okay.
But yeah, I'm just not really like a big like decor kind of guy. Like I like to wear clothes. That's just about it. So, and not always.
Not always.
So, anyways, yeah. But I'm happy for you. I'm glad you're getting a tattoo.
Yeah. At the beginning of the raffle, that was one of the things I said to the people I was around, was like, if I had to choose just one, I think I really want the tattoo.
Right, right. Well, what was the other?
The other prize I got?
Yeah, what else did you win?
It was a gift certificate to Back to Eden.
Oh,
the bakery on Alberta.
And we were going to go and try to get bread there the other day. And
yes,
not actually
not
so much bread. It's not really a bakery.
It's not that kind of bakery.
It's more like a bakery. Just like, I don't know, like the New Kids on the Block are actually kids, maybe, or something like that. Not so much.
Not so much.
So, yeah.
I mean, it was more of like a sweets bakery.
Yeah. It's a restaurant. It's a cafe.
Okay.
So,
yeah.
Anyways, it sounds like you're going to have a great meal there someday, but we could not buy like a baguette or anything, sadly. And I didn't even have a bike basket to put the baguette into, you know, so it wouldn't have worked anyways.
Yeah.
It's all good. But the move by bike was really cool because Gladys Bikes, when we talked to her, Gladys, just not a month ago, I actually made that joke and she hit me. So
oh, really?
I got to stop making that joke. Her name is Leah.
Leah Benson of Gladys Bikes.
Yeah, exactly. She had that shop location over on Williams, and it was a cool, hip neighborhood, great spot. But the shop itself was kind of tucked into this hallway.
You kind of had to know where it was.
Not really a storefront sort of location.
Yeah.
So, I don't think that was the only reason she moved out, but she has a much larger space, and it's over
and
on
storefront.
Alberta. Yes, and a storefront.
Yeah.
So a bunch of us. How many were there, do you think?
At least 50.
Okay. Yeah, there's a lot of folks. And we all put things onto our bikes. I don't even know what I carried, honestly. I had a big cardboard box, and when I moved it, things rattled around inside. So I'm assuming that was all by intent. Let's hope.
Let's hope so.
I didn't drop it or anything. But yeah, everybody just kind of put stuff. You had a stool, and what else did you have?
A flower box.
Okay, nice.
By the time I got to like loading my trailer, like mm-hmm. all the stuff was taken. I kind of felt a little ashamed of myself because I got there early and I was hanging out and I was talking to like people there. And what I didn't realize what was happening was there were other people going into Gladys and bringing stuff out and like pulling boxes out and leaving them like on the sidewalk.
Right.
With the intent of us loading them. So there's tons of people there. I'm just hanging out, you know, shooting the shit, and everybody's loaded up, and I'm like, wait, what am I supposed to carry?
And there was never really a call to action. Never really hey, all the stuff's over here.
Maybe it happened before I got there.
Okay.
But, I mean, I thought it was fairly early.
I think I got there around on time as well, and I never heard anyone
maybe
say.
Maybe I just didn't know like the code words to say.
It was by osmosis.
Hey, I'm cool, y'all.
Yeah.
You want to send me a little bit of stuff to haul here? Whatever.
But the common plight of the move by bikers is that oftentimes the cool stuff gets carried by somebody else. Like you brought sure. your huge trailer and you wanted to carry a bed or, I don't know, a fridge or whatever.
Yeah, and your wife stole my chair.
Well, to be fair, it's Leah's chair, but yeah, she took it.
Okay, yes. Yeah. I mean the chair that I was going to haul.
Yeah.
I had to settle for the stool and the flower box.
Right, right. Well, so it goes.
But, you know, like I said there, when we were over there loading, I'm not the kind of guy that would be self-conscious
right.
about a girl carrying more stuff on her trailer than me.
You did mention that several times,
yes.
which
yes.
Gave rise to the idea, maybe in popular opinion, that you were somewhat bothered by it.
No, I'm not. That's why I was telling everybody.
You really got to drop this, otherwise people are going to think you're sexist. It was a good time though. It was fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. And all the cool people were there. So,
two of the three Kellys we know were
that's
there.
Right. Yeah. And actually one of them sent us a voicemail.
Yes.
Play that later.
Yes.
We should play it now. Should we do that?
Can we?
Yeah.
Hi, Brock and Aaron. This is Kelly. Love listening to your show. Yay, Sprocket Podcast.
It's a good time. So much so that I was inspired, like we're moving out in about a month or so, and realized that I could probably do this move by bike thing. It wouldn't be hard. I've always been kind of nervous about it because you have to have all your stuff packed before people arrive. And every other time I've moved, I'm like, throw it in a box, throw it in a crate, just grab an armload of things. And that's what I do.
Right.
So yeah, but this will be good for me.
Yeah. So yeah, you're going to have things like boxed up ahead of time.
Yeah. Weird, right?
Yeah. Where are you moving?
I'm moving to nowhere, kind of. I'm moving to a mailbox. kind of like when I'm trying to remember when I first moved to Portland, I rented a mailbox near where I work, and that was kind of my address. It was on my driver's license and everything. And it was like a, you know, 1 foot by 5 inch by 6 inch space. And that was like my physical address. And then I was just kind of like staying on people's couches, and I had my RV parked at some friend's place for about a year or so. And then I finally got like an apartment and got a physical address in which I lived, and it worked out okay.
Did you feel like claustrophobic for a while?
Well, it was really hard to get myself into that mailbox, I'll tell you that. but this summer we're doing the same thing where we're going to, because rent is expensive and we don't work in the summer because we're both in the education professions. So we're going to go out and sleep in the woods, and that'll be fun. Little 2 month tour. And then we're going to come back in August when work starts for both of us again. And then we'll find a place. So I don't know where I'm moving to yet, but we're storing stuff at a friend's garage.
Right.
And matter of fact, if anybody's hearing this and they would like to help, there's a thing on Facebook that I created, an event to let you know when we're moving by bike. If you want to show up and help and carry something on your bike, we would love the help. And there's free beer at the end.
Ooh.
And free coffee
free
at the
beer.
Beginning. It's the best thing. It's like a fun sandwich. It's the best the best thing you could possibly ask for.
With fun in the middle, because really the move itself is pretty awesome.
Right. Plus, you don't see Oreos with like the white stuff on the outsides and the cookie in the middle.
No.
The fun is always Nabisco, in the middle.
Why hasn't Nabisco developed this?
My analogy is off. The fun, but maybe it's all fun, just different forms.
The fun I hear is between your legs.
There's a creamy nougat
it's
center
your bike.
Of bike move in the middle of this, and there's good stuff on other end. So it's going to be fun. Anyways, yeah. Jerry, have you ever done a move by bike?
No.
Okay.
No, I grew up in the generation that, you know, had moves by car. So
right.
That was a telltale of being in your 20s was that everything fit in a boot.
Oh, yeah.
Or a trunk or, you know, a small Pinto.
I remember these days.
So that was the merit badge of moving, you know, rather than the merit badge of where you are in terms of what you're carrying on your bike.
Right, exactly.
It was like, you know, when you got too much stuff that it took more than a car, then that was the doom of middle class.
Yeah.
So,
because then you need to buy a minivan or you need to buy like a larger truck.
Rent U-Haul.
You know? Or rent a U-Haul, yeah. Right. Unless you're just the kind of guy that drives like a... I always wanted to drive a milk truck around when I was a kid just because I thought they looked cool. Yeah. And that would fit more than your average car's trunk would. But I don't think you're necessarily moving up in the world if that's what you move to. So, yeah. Well, do you want to tell us a little bit, Jerry, about your connection to the bicycle? Because on your website, can we share your website with the public?
Sure.
Yeah. It's Zelada.com,
yeah,
which is Z-E-L-A-D-A.
Correct.
.com.
Yeah.
And there's some great photo collections up there. But one of the ones that was intriguing to me was the one with your ancestors with bicycles.
Well, there's actually sort of an irony of that in that I've been carrying around boxes of my family's photographs for a number of years. I mean, it's actually 3 decades. And I'm still finding some boxes that, embarrassingly, I've not look through, or either that or my memory is going and I've forgotten that I looked through them 20 years ago.
But you seal them back up with tape and then you're like, oh.
Right. Thought I looked through that. So actually about 3 or 4 years ago, I found this box that had some of the pictures that are on the website of my grandfather on a tricycle in the 1890s. He was born in 1897. And here he was on this beautiful little tricycle. And then I found him as a young man in his teens with this beautiful bike that I thought was made by Rivendell.
It kind of has that style.
But I realized that Rivendell had obviously copped this design. It's like a double bar.
Because they went around back then.
Crossbar at the top, yeah. Well, you know Grant. I mean, he's an old guy, right?
True. Well, and he has fashion of a different era.
Right. So... and then I found another picture of this huge longhorn handled, you know, sort of handlebars on another bike that was obviously my grandfather. So I had no idea. And then there's another picture. I'm not sure if it's on the website. I can't remember. But of my grandfather riding a bicycle backwards.
Oh, really?
That have been hesitant about trying to do.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
well, would this be a fixed bike, or is this
all fixed bikes? These were the 50s.
Okay, so everything was a fixed.
So even the internal hub was just beginning to be used, you know, by Schwinn and those folks. You know, the 3 speeds and then the 4 speeds. So
yeah, and this is back when Schwinn was still in Chicago.
This was those old days.
Yeah,
the real Mr. Schwinn.
There we go. Yeah. Before it became Target's house brand. I think that's what it is now.
Is that who owns it now?
I don't know if they own it, but it's like you go in there, you buy a bike accessories. My first pair of bike gloves was Schwinn gloves from Target.
Ah.
Yeah.
Hey, I saw a Schwinn unicycle.
Oh, really?
Yeah, next to Cha-Cha-Cha on Broadway.
I didn't know they made them.
It's a very beautiful, very singular kind of bent metal fork.
Interesting.
It doesn't look like a tube. It looks like a real slab of metal.
Oh, really?
Yeah. You should take a look. It's in the
fascinating.
Window. Or it's like, in the window 2 nights ago.
Like it's a solid thing of metal.
It's a solid thing. It's maybe like 4 or 5 millimeters thick. And it just is a simple, you know.
Simple arc.
Bent.
Huh.
You know, like you take a propeller and bend it. Huh.
These days could be mistaken as one of those new staple racks that's all trendy looking.
Right.
Yeah. Is that there's like a juggling shop over there on Broadway. Is that the one you're thinking of? Okay, yeah.
That's the place that has the unicycles. And
yeah.
Right.
So there's a Schwinn one.
Okay. Nice. Oh, so, kind of a historical piece.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Or maybe in the future will be a historical
piece. Right, right. Aaron, have you ever tried a unicycle? You ever had the opportunity?
Once when I was at Michigan State.
How'd you do?
I fell right on my ass.
Yes. Jerry, have you?
No.
Okay.
No. I would love to. Love to.
Yeah.
But haven't done it.
My mom sent me one for my birthday one year because I had the tall bike. And so she was like, oh, this is kind of like circusy like that. He might enjoy it.
Yeah,
but
yeah.
Turns out tall bike is still a bike. It's still got two wheels. You only have to worry about balance in two directions.
Sure.
Unicycle? Dangerous. Dangerous. I tried a couple times.
Haven't figured it out yet. Huh?
Just didn't. No, I gave it back. It's, honestly, I was like, it's not my thing.
It's all inner ear.
Yeah. Yeah.
Oh, well, then I'm screwed anyways. Well,
if you have a head like a rooster, you know, you ever do that thing where you like hold a rooster in your arms or whatever, and then like you move the body of the rooster around?
But
and
the head stays the same.
They have
the
wonderful
spot.
Inner ear, I'm sure. Yeah.
Really?
Yeah.
I've never seen that.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, there was, I mean, it's along the same lines of.
It's any like poultry, really.
Yeah. Yeah. And probably maybe even any bird. I'm not entirely sure. Maybe it has to do with flight and like what it takes to. Keep
some
yourself.
Kind of internal gyroscope going on.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, they have like little ferrite, you know, particles in their head somewhere.
That's right. Yes. You
know, is that right?
I mean, that's how they tell so true north.
Interesting.
Or somehow magnetic
like tapped
north,
into
rather.
the magnetosphere.
Yeah. Built-in compasses.
Yeah.
I didn't pay attention in class, I guess, about birds. I wish I knew more.
That was an episode of Radiolab.
Oh, okay. There we go. Easy enough. Speaking of birds, I don't mean to pull us off track here, but... Has anybody ever seen an albino crow?
No.
I saw an image of one.
Because there's been one hanging around my apartment building for like the past 2 weeks or something.
No kidding.
Wow. Yeah, and I've been trying to snap a picture of it every time. There's just one of them. He hangs out with the regular, you know, the regular colored crow. And then
they're not ostracized.
As far as I can tell.
Huh. Maybe they're colorblind.
Could be.
Crows?
I can't. They're very intelligent, right?
Totally.
But I'm just trying to figure out if it's like if there's some like impending doom. If like I saw the white crow and it's like my albatross for Portland, and then all of a sudden
the
like something happens.
Whale.
Or maybe it's like a great thing. Like maybe something great is about to happen because I saw the albino crow. Maybe if I can snap a picture of it, then like I will have my key to greatness. I have no idea. But anyways, that's neither here nor there.
You should read the white chapter of Moby Dick again.
I should look into that. Yeah, it's been just long enough.
Yeah.
Also, the albatross was considered lucky.
Lucky?
Really?
Yes. Oh, it wasn't until some dude killed and ate it that disaster began to...
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, what about the rhyme of the ancient mariner? The albatross was like foretelling doom.
No, the albatross was leading them home. It was...
Really?
I'll have to read this again.
Interesting.
But yeah, it was like some dude killed and ate it. And then they were like, well, how are we getting home? And then all was lost.
And you've seen what those things eat anyways. Like that wouldn't be good. Like why would you eat the albatross? Terrible
That's
idea.
That's
terrible
true.
Idea.
They eat garbage. I don't know.
Yeah.
Literary people, go ahead and correct me.
Right. And we're probably also going to get corrections because I just like, for the sake of humor, I just mashed up the albatross and the seagull. Very different things, I know. You know, stop writing your letters now.
No, write to us. It's, you know, trouble's a form of attention.
Right, right. But Jerry, how did you start personally with bicycles? You've got this, you found the photos of your family, right. Which apparently is a very hidden secret until you found those photos. But how did you yourself get into riding a bike and being on?
Oh, I think it was pure freedom. I grew up in the middle of Illinois. I was born in Central America, but grew up in the middle of Illinois. And the bike was, you know, around the block, you know, was the first tether. And then all of a sudden, you know, first or second grade, then you could go further.
Right.
And so I just kept going farther or further. And my first supposedly real bike trip was sixth grade, which I went to Trilla, you know, which was 6 miles out of town.
Okay. But you're leaving town.
I was out in the cornfields.
Yeah, at what, sixth grade, you said?
Sixth grade.
Okay. That's pretty early for most people's experiences on long distance riding.
We had, you know, peanut butter sandwiches and, you know, kind of brown paper. And,
were you going with friends?
A soda can. No, I went alone.
Okay.
So, which has sort of been the hallmark maybe of my biking.
Right.
Then Boys Life, you know, Cub Scouts, Boy Scouts.
I was going to say, that's the Boy Scout magazine.
Right, yeah. Okay. So Boys Life, and here again, this is in the late 50s, ran an article about this 13-year-old from Connecticut that... biked across the United States.
Oh, my.
And his Boy Scout uniform?
No, no, he didn't. But it's interesting rereading it as an adult, and you're going, you know, somebody wrote this. This is not a kid's writing. However, for me in like 1957...
You're like, the kid wrote this, just like this.
Right. Yeah. So it really implanted the seed, mm-hmm. like, hey, I want to do that.
Yeah.
And of course, I was not allowed to do that as a 13-year-old. But so it took until I was 25, 24, before I biked from New York to Illinois.
Okay.
And again, by myself. Actually, it was hard to find panniers. I went to Kmart in the Kitty, you know, birthday section and bought some very small blue panniers.
Yeah.
That were sort of a birthday gift for somebody.
Okay.
Know,
yeah.
To ride around the neighborhood. But I used them to bike.
And this is before panniers were really a big business. Like there weren't a lot of options for that.
No, there were none.
Yeah.
I mean, there were no panniers. They were made out of canvas, you know, for BMW motorcycles and you could kind of put them on your bike. Or you had the cowboy ones that had the fringe. You know, that
leather ones for your Harley, or
right, or you could decorate your bike. I mean, there were also, you know, those cowboy things.
Oh, okay.
You know, with the streamers on the handlebars
for style,
matching color and black.
Were they leather streamers?
Don't remember.
Depends on the kind of panniers you got, I suppose.
Yeah, we're talking the 1970s.
Yeah, here. Yeah.
So, so I rode, you know, 1,000 miles, and I had, you know, $2 sneakers. You know, shorts, T-shirt. I was not in any kind of lycra.
Yeah.
You know.
Normal clothing.
Normal clothing. Yeah, summer clothing. So that was sort of, again, that really solidified my love of biking from place to place.
Sure. So you had a good experience. Like even though you didn't have specialized gear, this was something that like it
there was no specialized gear in those days.
There was none.
You know, these were the days when people wanted Campagnola. You know, they wanted to imitate Eddie Mercek. They wanted to go to Italy. They wanted to go to France.
You know?
There was no urban bicycle world.
Right.
Except in England, which had the 3-speed upright black bikes.
Sure, you know? Sure.
So even, and in fact, my saddle, which I was able to use until a couple of years ago, which was an Ideal saddle, the guys at the bike shop told me that I should put it in a bucket of water and then ride 50 miles, and it would become my butt.
Interesting.
So I did that, and it indeed became my butt.
Uh-huh.
And I rode it until just 2 years ago, where it finally fell apart.
Oh, wow. There's a pretty big emotional investment.
Yeah.
And I mean, it's something that's so close to you, like, in many ways.
It's at the end of the other end of the mouth, yes.
Right,
it's very
right.
Close to you, but
the long body cavity. Is this something that was that emotionally hard for you to see it go? Because you'd use the same piece of equipment
for so long.
I've been
hanging on to it for a long time, and my best friend makes fun of it because it somewhat looks like Mount St. Helens. One side is it is not symmetric.
Yeah.
So one side sort of has a. I wouldn't say a blowout like Mount St. Helens.
But just kind of sloughed away.
It gives saddle a new meaning.
Right.
In terms of geography.
It's like Saddle Mountain.
Yeah. And you know how one side, like the side that goes northward from Saddle Mountain, is a little more gentle slope. The side that goes to Columbia River is much more steep.
A little bit steeper.
And that's a great analogy. And it's true.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it was the end of the Ideal.
Right.
Or Ideal, however you pronounce it, saddle.
Yeah, that was the name, the brand name of it.
Yeah, it's
okay.
French. So
interesting.
Anyway, so that ended. So then my next bigger trip was from Forest Grove to New York in 1982.
That's a good long ways.
So that was that was even better. I was surprised how great Americans were.
Yeah?
Americans were very friendly.
That's good.
No, I mean, it was really... You know, I grew up in the Vietnam War era, so
right.
So there was a whole, generation gap. There's a whole distrust of cops. We used to call them pigs. You know, I mean, that's, emblazoned on my generation.
Right, right.
But got invited into many people's homes. I had only one bad incident with a driver who was probably drunk.
Okay.
In northern Colorado, in fact.
That increases the likelihood that it'll be a bad interaction. Was it just bad driving and a scary situation?
It was bad driving.
Okay,
you know,
or was it?
I could
there
see
some
it in the rearview mirror that he had no idea where the where either line was, or you know, where the borders of the concrete were. So I let him pass, and I could see that he was continuing his same sine curve down the down the highway.
And he thought he was driving in a straight line.
Who knows? Yeah. Who knows?
But it wasn't a confrontation. You didn't like.
Nobody was throwing. Okay. No one threw anything at me. And so I've been just biking all my life.
Yeah.
When I went to optometry school, I biked every day, you know, to school, and you know, so it's always been there.
Right.
So it's incredible. It's incredibly emotional for me, actually, to see how many people are doing bicycle things in Portland.
Yeah, because
and the rest of the world. I don't think people understand what a void it was. Even though there's always been a group of people who have been bicycling, this is such a swell of folks who are intelligent, they're engaged, they're having fun.
Right.
Which I think is a huge component. You know, there are not too many people who used to, you know, drive for fun in the country. I mean, that was a big thing in the 50s and 60s.
Going for drives, yeah.
Going for drives. Let's Sunday go have drive. Fun and drive somewhere. But now it's much more human-to-human scale.
Right.
You know, so it's that Painalosa kind of event. You see people's faces. You say hello to them.
Right.
I often go down the Esplanade just to kind of shed the day. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there's several people that I see often during the week, and it's so fun to wave at them. And You know, we don't stop and have hearty conversations, but you have this little connection, this little spiderweb connection.
Hmm. It's like the acknowledgement that you indeed are a person and you are over there.
Right, and it really is a community.
Yeah. That's interesting because I feel like, Aaron, correct me if I'm off base, but I feel like when you get to a city of a certain size, and Glenn from Canada actually mentioned this, that like there are so many bicyclists in this town that it's no longer a special thing to be on a bike, and a lot of people aren't saying hi to each other or aren't acknowledging. I mean, even this morning on my commute to work, I was at a light next to a guy for like 2 or 3 minutes, and we didn't say much. Like, I think he turned and said, "Think it's going to rain?" I said, "My money's on it."
Yeah.
And that was it.
It's a Portland conversation.
Yeah, yeah. And a bad one at that. But yeah, I mean, what do you think, Aaron? Is that accurate?
To my experience, it's pretty accurate.
Yeah.
Although I'm more apt to say hi or to, like, even just give a nod to somebody or wave to somebody.
But that's a connection.
It's certainly a connection.
It doesn't have to be a heart-to-heart.
Right.
No.
You know, it's
certainly more so than, like, if I was in a car here.
Nice BMW.
Yeah. Like, you know, I drive for work a lot. And, you know, in the work van, I have no real compunction to, like, as I'm at the stop sign or stoplight, look over at the guy next to me and kind of give
What's
him
up?
The, yeah. But I honestly, I feel a certain sense of duty if I'm on my bike and another cyclist comes up, you know, in the lane with me to, like, at least just be like, "Hey, what's up?"
Well, I think you should do it in the car.
I don't mean a car, but
I think if you're on a bike, you should say hello to the person in a car, because I think life is learning. So that teaches them, like, "Oh, I kind of made a connection there." You know,
right?
And again, it's I think that's what we sorely need, to build a fabric so it's not so partisan. You know, bikes versus cars, Republicans versus Democrats, cats and dogs. You just get tired of that rhetoric and that division. That
Oregonian happens. Readers and everybody else.
Yeah. So I think those things break down and reconnect.
Yeah. I think that's super valuable. And I've been trying to do more of that. I think this is before we started the show, but we were talking about, like, walking around with earbuds in versus not. And you were saying, Jerry, that you're into not distracting yourself too much and kind of being open to the world around you.
Well, my friends had begged to differ, but I may be distracted all the time. But
sure.
When I tend to bike, I'm really looking and listening.
Yeah.
As best my ears do. So, you know. I do dislike, you know, seeing people bicycle with buds on, because I think it's one more distraction that we all have, and it breaks down that being there quality of of humanness.
Sure. And one more barrier, I suppose, to people like actually getting that chance to interact with each other.
I think it's a lost chance, not necessarily a barrier.
Okay.
But yeah. Just, you know, possibility.
Yeah.
Connections.
Maybe like try it without the earbuds sometime and see how it goes.
Yeah. I mean, people are so amped up on having information coming in all the time.
Right, right.
That it's very hard to wean yourself away when you don't have that. And you have to just listen or just be awake.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
yeah.
I think you could make a leap of faith, even to the whole syndrome of having kids with a blank piece of paper.
Sure.
You know, that's the thing in our society where people don't have that kind of thing anymore. Everybody's so programmed. You go to soccer at 4, you go to ballet at 6 o'clock, you squeeze in a meal, you know.
Yeah, and you have to have a good vehicle to zip back and forth.
And,
yeah,
and having a moment to really sit and dawdle and daydream and come up with something yourself, that's a skill. That's a skill set. And I think that's being dumbed down.
Sure.
You know, by us all being assaulted with so much stuff to do.
Information overload, activity overload.
Yeah.
Frantic schedules. Yeah.
I mean, it's more than distraction.
Right. Because distractions you can bat away.
Yeah.
It's the oppressiveness of the ever looming schedule, never getting a break, maybe.
Or kind of, you know, what I would call, well, actually not what I would call, but my partner would call executive decision making.
Okay.
You know, where you actually say, okay, I'm going to do this, and what do I need to do this? You know, how do I need to get this done? What do I need? You know, so instead of looking up on Google, how do you bake a cake? You figure things out, and you might look it up, and you might want to make a variation rather than being so pedestrian and follow the recipe to the exactness.
Right, sticking to the script. And what was that quote from Marin?
Why Google when you can speculate?
Right, right, which is beautiful.
Oh, that's nice. Yeah,
yeah. Mark Marin's a smart guy.
Piece of paper.
Yeah, something about that, making space and not being just dialed in all the time.
Yeah,
yeah.
I think you could, again, if we could just keep going. I think there's a certain thing that happens in our bike politic world that suffers from that as well. You know, that we all want scripts of how to do things.
Right.
You know, and having that creative energy to come up with new things is difficult. But I think our sector of the world is really successful. You know, like the folks in Texas who are able to take a small town and they can, through the freedom of their DOT, they can draw lines, they can put sofas in parking spaces, you know, they can develop a scenario.
This is interesting. Sofas and parking spaces.
Reinvigorate, you know, a small town that was maybe perhaps dead and really invite people to come down, open up a new coffee shop in that area.
Yeah.
And really be creative with that.
Right, right.
I think the example of our bike parking, you know, that happened multiple years ago, starting, you know, by Fresh Pot in the Northeast. I think that was the first one. I mean, that is a creative leap.
Are you talking about the stall bike parking with like 8 staples in a single parking space or thereabouts?
Yeah. I'll get this wrong, and my friends will criticize me, but they're either bike corrals or they're bike carols.
Yes.
You know, and one is a singing event, and the other one is is an okay corral kind of thing.
Right, right, right.
But those things are, that's a great creative act.
Yes.
That happened.
It's unconventional.
And now it's becoming conventional, except for 28th Street.
Sure.
So.
Yeah, because here in Portland, we just recently heard the bad news to a lot of people in the bicycling world that they will not be installing separate bicycle infrastructure on this commercial street like they had thought about doing.
Well, we hope there's change in the wind. I think publishing the 60 people who were against that innovation that Roger Geller was trying to lead into 28th Street, I think there's still time for the pendulum to move there.
Like the conversation's not done yet.
I hope not. Because that is prime opportunity for our presence, and by our, I mean the bike world, to be there and to actually increase those coffers of those restaurants, the businesses along there. I think, you know, what happened in New York City with 8th Avenue, 9th Avenue, 1st and 2nd, and showing how the economics really changed the clock. It reduced the number of empty stores. It increased the number of dollars coming into the restaurants, you know, by 15-20%. It reduced traffic collisions and head-ons. They didn't have very many deaths, so deaths weren't reduced, but the number of altercations were reduced. You know, that is a prime area. And if I can even go further.
You're sure?
Is that all right?
No, go ahead. I was just going to ask a clarifying question about New York because I'm not super familiar with the case study. But
well, this happened a couple of years ago, and then I'll come back to 28.
Yes.
A couple of years ago, Shadik Khan produced at a design, I forget the exact name, but it was in November of 12. There was a big design group of urban people, and she produced this incredible document showing how 8th and 9th Street, which is on the west side, and 1st and 2nd, which is on the east side, they changed intersections. So they increased safety islands when you were crossing those big streets. Those streets are big. They're 4 to 5, you know, lanes of traffic. And they put in a bike lane, a segregated bike lane. They produced the islands. They produced areas of not bike parking, but restaurant allocated areas where they could move tables out onto the sidewalk.
So the business moves out farther towards the street.
Exactly. And that slows down pedestrian traffic. It gets people to look to see what's available on the street. It allows emergency vehicles to take over the bike lanes so that they can actually get to someone who is in need. And then get back into traffic instead of being in the middle of the street because the taxis and all the other narcissistic people won't let, you know, the EMT vehicles get closer to the people.
Right, right.
So there's lots of very positive things that come with that segregated bike lane.
Yeah.
And so she showed in a very determined way the economic benefits.
And this is the Bike Czar of New York, right?
This essentially. Is the Bike Czar, the previous Bike Czar of New York.
Okay.
So swinging back to Portland, this 28th Street could be a really incredible design for establishing that kind of economics and on 28th Street, which is already a great economic street.
Yeah, yeah. And it's been coming up for the past couple of years as kind of, you know, more and more hip places are going there. I quite enjoy City State Diner. Their pickles are wonderful.
Yeah. So this, I think it could lead into criticism, perhaps, of Oregonians in a way, and forgive me for that. But I think there's a passive aggressiveness that happens here.
Oh, yeah.
That, you know, whether it's racism or economic development or whatever. And I think we saw that with the Williams fascinating, you know, interaction of the people that live there, the people who are new to the area. The ignorance of the history being really finally dealt with, but I think
a big disconnect with racial tensions and former residents versus the ones that are kind of buying up and redeveloping the area.
Right, and but I think there's something else that's even broader, and I think that's the passive aggressive issue. And I think having open houses in a way is that passive aggressive. Issue that happens in the bike world where, like, oh, let's have an open house and we will listen to you. Whereas you have a much more active Shadik Khan in New York where she goes door to door, knocks on doors and goes, what do you think?
Very active engagement.
How about if I increase your business by 15%? Give me a parking space. I'll have 20 people parking there, you know, instead of one car.
Yeah.
And we think of some place like Staccato Gelato.
Right.
That's really just, it's a transient kind of place. You come in, you buy a cup, and you leave.
Right.
And whoever drives there and empties out their four people, walks into the building, gets a cup of chocolate, gets back in the car, drives somewhere else, when you could have 30 bikes park, you know, in a couple of spaces.
You could be selling five times that much gelato.
Exactly. And that's the kind of direct thing that we need to be doing. We don't need to be having a an open house. I mean, we do need the open house. So forgive me for, you know, just damning that.
Well, we're not gonna steamroll our public process, but it needs to be more active than that. You're saying
exactly. Okay. I think we need that direct engagement, knock on doors. You know, let people know, hey, this is possible for your business.
Yeah.
I think that's a teaching moment, you know, rather than the passive, oh, come look at how I've designed your street.
Sure.
You know, let me help you out by designing your street. That's a passive aggressive form of activism.
Well, and it disempowers the people who will be most directly affected by this as well. Whereas if you do go door to door, you have direct dialogue with the people, you know, the business owners or whatever, they're going to end up feeling a sense of ownership about this because they've talked to the designers or they've talked to the legislators and really had a sense of closure around this issue, you know, as opposed to you have, you know, a big forum, people come to any conversation with their preconceived notions. But when you have a big forum and like you come out on a limb, like say I'm a business owner and I don't think this is a good idea, I might be able to be swayed one way or another, but not when I've already come out on a limb publicly and said, like, I don't think this is a good idea. 'Cause now I have to back that up. Now I have to kind of like stick my feet in the ground and really dig in, you know, because I've made it on record and I've sort of like become the representative of the rest of the throng.
We're kind of saying like how to save face, right?
Yeah, 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 yeah. And it sort of becomes like a passive aggressive thing,
yeah,
in a way, because you want to be polite about it because we're nothing if we're not polite over here.
That's right.
Well, we want to be polite. I mean, you know, I mean that's the grease, right?
Sure.
That keeps
sure.
us
yeah,
from,
no, no,
from grading
I
up.
I don't mean like we shouldn't be polite. But.
No. But I think we're so emphasized on polite, politically correct,
yeah, I agree. And
I think it's difficult to get over that hump where when you want to be much more direct, that gets viewed as, oh, you're being aggressive and get out
you're
of my
face. You're steamrolling. Yeah. Well,
the hell with those impolite people.
You can have, I think you can have more direct conversations or more direct dialogues when it's just, you know, a few people, as opposed to, you know, if I'm on the other side and I'm saying like, here's what I'm doing with your road. Again, I've got to dig in and I've got to really like put this on you and say like, I'm the smart one and I'm the one with the solution. And I'm going to, like, I don't know, save your business or your street.
Yeah. And if you're not into
through
it,
my innovation.
It becomes like
a
tree-sitting dynamic.
Well, and it's disempowering. It's telling the other person as the business owner, you don't know what to do with your shit, you know?
But I mean, the people that I know in ODOT and PBOT are not those kind of folks.
Okay.
I mean, they don't come in with, like, I'm going to save your world. They're the people I know are very genuine.
Sure. No.
But I think that passivity, because they have to do it in a group, it makes it more difficult to hear from people. Whereas if you go door to door, if you spend the money as a PBOT manager and say, okay, we're going to take 10 people, we're going to canvas this street, and we're going to go door to door. Let's hear what people have to say. Bring that together. Have an open house, bring the ideas together. I would defend ODOT and PBOT in that they are good listeners.
All right.
And they've really learned that lesson since William Street.
Right.
I mean, that is the gong on their head now.
On that project. It's been several
but
years
they,
now, right?
I think they were that way before. Mm-hmm. But I think the open house process it leans towards passivity.
Yeah. It's not as active as it could be.
Not so much the arrogance of like, or hubris of like, okay, I got this together. We're going to put two lanes here. We're going to put sidewalks here. We're going to move the meters on this side of the street, et cetera. You know, my sense of, from the people that I know, they don't have that. But they get portrayed that way. They certainly got portrayed that way in the early days of Williams.
Yeah, certainly. You know,
but I would sort of wonder if that really was the case.
Right.
I would be happy if that is not the case. Or, you know. Yeah, I would be happy to know that yeah, the process is certainly not as disempowering as I make it, and I could be but I think, hyperbolizing.
But here I'm sorry, I sound schizophrenic, maybe. But
that's all right.
I think you're correct in that when you don't have that enthusiasm, that passion, that, you know, kind of like, wow, this could really do something for your business, I think that disempowers. You know, so I think what you're sensing about the disempowerment of the process, I do think that that occurs. Does that make sense? Am I being squiggly?
No, not at all. I don't think you contradicted yourself at all.
Kind of saying that perception is important as much as the actual intent and the actual process.
Right?
Yeah, like
perception is it. Yeah.
The medium is the message.
Yeah.
So yeah.
Yeah.
Well, I'm curious because you've been involved in some kind of upper level Oregon Department of Transportation stuff, and we just got, what was it? Is it multimodal? Approval for multimodal considerations in every part of the state, right?
Yeah, the history of that is really, and I think we need to thank Kitzhaber and Lynn Peterson, who of course moved north to Washington to become the transportation director of Washington State.
Interesting.
Lynn and Kitzhaber really put together a 5 or 6 point plan, which asked the questions about sustainability.
Yeah.
And so these questions of sustainability, one of which was who's at the table.
Okay.
And when you look at the bylaws of some of the what are called ACTs, these are the Area Commission on Transportation, they were absent. So they said, hey, we need to get this together. They told Matt Garrett, the director, and Jerry Bohard, the assistant, they said, you need to place multimodal at the table.
Make sure they have a voice.
Right. So this is November 2011.
A long time ago. But yeah, okay.
Another one era.
2011.
And so that got the ball rolling.
Ah.
And so now there are multiple ACTs that have multimodal positions, and they are voting positions.
Okay.
There are several that do not.
Right. Well, I was wondering maybe southeastern Oregon might be one of those places where you don't expect there to be too many bicycles down out of Burns.
Well,
I would like to go there on a bike, but
Burns is an interesting place. I almost froze at Burns and listened to a conversation. I was bicycling across Oregon. And,
wait, you biked through Burns?
Oh, yeah.
Really?
Route 22.
Hey, Aaron, you know where Burns is, right?
I do.
It's on the way to Jordan Valley.
Yes. And Burns Junction.
Burns Junction. Yeah. There's a great congestion sign at Burns Junction.
Is there?
Yes. Both houses.
Did it just say congestion?
Congestion.
You might see like more than one vehicle at a time here.
Yes. And perhaps an antelope. Who knows?
Right.
But actually, it was in the southwest corner that was the more difficult issue. So, and just to remind people, the ACTs, what they are.
Yes.
If I can.
Please do.
So ACTs were created in the early 90s, and their intention was to help the OCT, which is the Oregon Commission of Transportation, make decisions from different specific areas of Oregon and help them decide how to spend the money.
Okay.
Because the OCT was realizing the difficulty in terms of adjudicating dollars across the state, and who has knowledge, you know, when you're a 4 or 5 member panel about the whole state. So,
right.
So the legislature actually created the ACTs in order to feed the OCT decision-making apparatus.
You get more eyes and ears in all the different places around the
state. And more participation.
Okay.
So, yeah. You know, it's a great gesture. But again, that glass ceiling for bicycle and pedestrians was really firmly in place in those days. So we and the bike world, pedestrian world, were not participant. And it was mostly concrete projects.
Okay.
So where do you put the ribbon of highway? So the Kitzhaber Peterson issue in November 2011 was really a very big deal.
Right.
And this really was a shock to the number of people who were on the ACT commissions. I was very luckily able to be at there and a participant.
Yeah. How did you get involved?
I was the chair of the Oregon Bicycle and Pedestrian Advisory to ODOT.
Okay.
So I came up through that route.
Gotcha.
And was able to participate in this. They, again, I think it's thanks to Lynn Peterson. She was invited me to the table, and so we were participant.
Okay, we're going to miss her. Hope she does well in Washington.
We do miss her. I think she's doing a great job over there.
They got, I'm trying to remember who did the ranking, but they were like the number one state for bicycling in the U.S.
They are.
By someone's list.
From the league.
The League of American Bicyclists. Yeah. Okay.
Well, those guys don't screw around.
They do not.
No, but they also have dollars, and they have decided to dedicate those dollars. You know, their Safe Routes to School program is really incredibly endowed in order to get more kids walking and bicycling to school.
That's so great.
Look at the dollars, it is much more than what we're doing. In defense of Oregon, you know, we are not one of the 13 states that decided not to fund Safe Routes to School. So of the 50 states from the last federal dollars, MAP 21, that gave us money, what happened, you know, a summer ago, was you could decide as a state whether or not you're going to fund Safe Routes to School.
Right.
13 states turned it down. They decided to use the money for other things. Oregon came up with $500,000. It's not the same $1 million that we've had before, but at least they said this is important.
That's good.
So that's better than nothing.
Right, certainly. Right.
But the next step is we need to make those priorities really known. We need the advocacy there. And I think that's where the ACTs come in. It's we need to get everybody to be going to the ACT meetings. Whether you live in Brothers or Junction or Klamath Falls or Bend or Pendleton or Beaverton, you know, with JPAC, we need to get people participating. And I think that's even coming back to 28th Street, I think we need to get people to support Roger Geller, you know, with his idea to renovate 28th, and we need to go knocking on those doors to get the dollars and to get people's attention.
So you find the people that care about the issue and make sure that they speak out about the issue.
That they participate.
Yeah.
I love Sheila Lyons, who runs the bike pedestrian program for our state. She said, you know, once that occurred, she says, well, now that we're at the table, we have to cut our own meat.
Ah,
and
right.
I think that's a great.
Get out your serrated knives, folks.
Yes. Even for the vegetarians. but we have to participate
right.
at a greater level. And I think I worry about a certain amount of, reservation.
Uh-huh.
And maybe entitlement that comes from the bike community
that
they need to do something for us.
Where do you think that comes from, or what informs that?
Could be fatigue.
Uh-huh. It's like people are tired of asking. You know? Okay.
But it's hard to know. I think there's a great resurgence of people who are really interested and really see the value.
Uh-huh.
So
yeah,
I think, you know, we need those segregated bikeways.
Okay,
because that,
yeah.
I think that's the single thing that will bring more people.
Yeah. It's again and again, people use the interested but concerned category of
exactly.
People who would do it if they thought it was a little safer.
That's our target.
Uh-huh. That's like the biggest percent, right?
Yeah,
I believe
60%.
So.
60%. Yeah. But that is who we should be talking to. You don't need to be talking to me. You don't need to be talking to yourself. You know,
I talk to myself quite often. And I usually wrap up with, I don't need to be talking to myself.
Or what did I say?
That's wisdom for the ages right there.
That's right.
But seriously, I think the Sunday parkways are, you know, that's such a great stimulus. It's a great inoculation.
That's right. Yeah.
You know that.
And we're just back into that season again now.
Yeah.
It's coming up. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, this Sunday, right?
I believe so. Yeah. May 11th. Is,
oh, no kidding. That's
Mother's Day. That's East Portland.
Yeah.
And that's my old neighborhood, actually. And then I forget the breakdown. I know Southeast is in August, which is the one that I would go to for where I live
the
now.
The one that goes up Tabor?
I think so, yeah. But I won't be living here, I guess, at that point. Maybe I will. No. I hope I will.
You'll and be then, closer to the East?
Yeah, we'll see.
Are you going to tour the state?
We're going to be touring a little bit of Oregon, a little bit of Washington. Yeah, and Aaron, you and I and Adele are going to go out to Missoula.
Oh.
Mark our words.
Yeah.
Right. Come hell or high water. Right.
And I guess this is the first time I've actually mentioned that my plans have changed, because last time I talked about the trip, I was like, we're going across the country.
Yeah, we're still going across the country.
And then I said, screw that. I'm tired of people telling me that they expect me to cross the continent. I just want to go to the woods where I like to camp for free, and you know, I really like the Northwest.
So are you thinking about bicycling back from Missoula or anything like that?
Yes. So yeah, we'll bike there. We'll bike back.
I got to take a train.
Oh, right. It's true, because you have to get back to work.
To get back to work.
Yeah. Ooh. You have a resource, Jerry?
Remind me. I flew to Missoula, and then I biked back along the Lewis and Clark. To Clarkston.
Oh, nice.
But there are two wonderful hot springs.
Oh, really?
That are east of Missoula.
Okay.
This is
along the Lakshaw River.
That's good to know of.
They're really beautiful.
Yeah. I think I've heard of that. But this is funny. Like, it's something about bicycling and especially like bike camping. I've heard more people tell me about hot springs along the ways from one place to another.
than almost anything else?
More than anything else. Like, oh, you need to stop at this hot springs on the way to, you know.
Yeah.
Well, I can tell you about scat if you want. But
we're not talking about jazz here now.
We're not talking about Ella Fitzgerald. No. We're talking about human scat. So when I biked from Missoula, you know, you go up the first little mountain there, and I stopped at this little 7-Eleven. I said, well, what's interesting around here? And they said, oh, well, there's a Lewis and Clark encampment. You know, you should go there.
Right.
So it was just about 6 miles or so. So, of course, talk about distracted. I love traveling and being distracted. And so I went to this little tiny campground. And what happened the day before was that this archaeologist had these images from space, and they found two latrines that were in rectangles.
Oh, my.
And one was a big rectangle, and one was a small rectangle. And that was a hallmark of military encampments from Lewis and Clark time.
Interesting.
And so this archaeologist...
He's speculating that these were dug by the Lewis and Clarks.
Exactly. Okay. So the next step, which is really the fun part, which is the scat part.
Is exhuming? Exhuming? Digging up?
Dug up. They dug up and they found mercury.
Really?
And they found mercury in the infantry's latrine.
Okay? Oh, my.
And so part of the training of Lewis and Clark, and I forget which one was the more medical man, but he had trained in Washington, D.C. with a particular doctor. And this doctor had developed something like Dr. Thunderbolt's cure-all.
Like, eat this.
And they're like mercury pills or something?
Right. So which was almost pure mercury.
Oh, my God.
Which would make you have, you know, a complete evacuation.
You have died of dysentery.
You have died of dysentery.
Wow.
But it would cure you of dysentery.
I guess, yeah.
Because there was nothing left to dysenter.
Wow.
So they felt that this particular encampment was definitely a Lewis and Clark along the trek.
Because of the mercury. Intriguing.
Because of the mercury in these little square latrines that were seen from, you know, way up above.
Yes, poop from
radar.
Space.
But that's isn't that the beauty of bicycling?
Yes. It
poop
connects
from space.
It connects you to all these interesting things.
It connects you to poop from space.
That you wouldn't otherwise know about.
Well, this story actually went in a very different direction than I was imagining. And I'm glad for that.
Oh, you don't trust those guys from the 1800s? They were crazy. Yeah. You ever meet one?
No.
Just walk the other way.
Just walk away.
Yeah. For many reasons.
They might smell.
Possibly. Yeah. It's all the mercury.
But they did beautiful drawings.
Yeah. Yeah.
I mean, if you've seen the notebooks from Lewis and Clark, I mean.
Yeah. It's really cool to kind of be able to travel that historic pathway, that historic corridor as well.
So I'm hoping you're going there, because it's a lovely road.
Well, now that I know about it, I'm going to look for it.
There are places where there's no berm. There's no place to go.
Uh-huh.
I found all the trucks very courteous. They would move over.
Okay.
I found the recreational vehicles, and I'm sorry that you own one, but...
I don't anymore.
Okay, well, that's good. So you're a reformed...
I was given one, and I lived in it for about 2 years, and then I, you know, as is the way of all things, it broke down beyond my ability to repair it,
Well, I found it interesting. I would be going down the highway. There's nobody else coming the other way against me.
Yes.
And the recreational vehicle would absolutely adhere to the yellow line.
Right.
They
no
would
space.
Not move over right. and give the lone bicyclist a little bit of
was it
airspace.
Rented? Hmm? Was it rented?
Somewhere not. I mean, you know, they're big.
Yeah.
I have pretty strong prejudices against rental yeah. RVs.
Oh, you think there's a division?
Oh, yeah. Huh? Yeah. Interesting. I don't know. My viewpoint or my speculation is the people who rent RVs are usually least qualified to drive RVs.
Yeah.
I would probably broaden that category myself. But I think
nobody's qualified to drive an RV.
At least the people that own them have enough time to actually figure out how the thing works. Sure. If you rent them, you've got them for what, a week, a month, and that's just barely enough time to know how to go forward, let alone.
I almost think there should be a commercial license.
Oh, you know
RV.
It. You know it.
Oh, that's just more big government.
Don't tread on me.
It must be like recreational vehicle care, right?
Right.
By
right.
Obama, no right. doubt.
Exactly.
I do have a positive story.
It's Obama RV.
I do have a positive story about RV.
Really?
Yeah, I was...
is it possible?
It is very possible.
Very good.
This is a sweet story. Well, I think it's sweet, but... Wow. So my partner, Martine, and I were biking to Crater Lake, which, you know, coming from the north side is a huge hill
yeah.
that goes up to Crater Lake.
We've done this.
Oh, okay.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So what we did was we took the train to Chemult.
Okay.
Got off at Chemult. Stayed overnight, Featherbed Inn.
Yeah.
And then we you know, biked up, what is that, 138?
Is the one that goes up to, like, Diamond Lake?
Right.
Okay.
And then you make a left. So, you know, that's a long
138,
haul.
That
is.
Hill of death.
Yeah, and this is yeah. from Chemult, which it's the high desert, but that's still right. the valley floor.
Right. It is dry and hot.
Yes.
So anyway, so we get there. We get to the entrance to the Crater Lake. Martine is really wiped out. She's very hot, overheated. And so she decides she'll wait in for somebody with a nice truck and haul her bike up to the top. And
oh, there we go.
And of course, you know, again, maybe it's the macho thing of like, well, did you take the refrigerator, you know, along for Gladys's move?
Right.
But so I decided to go ahead. I wanted to bike, you know, being a pristine biker, et cetera. So I almost get to the top and I'm beginning to feel my leg wanting to cramp.
Ooh.
And I've sort of run out of water. So I get to the top, which has the overview, you know, right at...
Yeah, when right, you get to the lip of the
where
lake.
Where the and... T, you know, meets the rim of the road.
Yeah.
And I get off the bike, I got to walk. So I'm walking up to the rim, and then this incredible, you know, physiological, you know, nightmare happens in one of the quads.
Oh, yeah.
And I get, like, I can't get to the ground. I can't stand up. I'm in this mid-squat position, and I start yelling because it hurts a lot.
Yes,
and all
in the grip of pain.
And all of a sudden, all the tourists around me begin to scatter.
Ooh, it's like a physical purgatory.
Right, so it's just like, you know, this solar event.
Wow.
And you see the planets moving away from you.
A shockwave.
So this, I'm going to use the word old guy, the 75-year-old guy comes up and he says, having a cramp, are we? And he grabs my leg, okay, and starts massaging it.
Uh-huh.
I cannot do a thing other than sort of wince and moan. Exactly.
Yeah.
And he gets it to the point where I can finally get to the ground, and I get, you know, I get abated in terms of like the hysteria that I'm feeling inside my head.
Yes.
And then he gives me a ride to the Crater Lake Lodge.
Okay.
In an RV. So yeah. On the back of the RV is hanging my bike.
There we go.
Yes.
And
from a bike rack or just like
no,
from
just
the ladder?
From the rim.
Yeah.
You know, from the little, you know, fence on top that yeah. a lot of RVs
yeah.
have.
Yeah.
And poor Martine, of course, has gotten a ride in a truck and is waiting for me. And she comes up to the guy and says,
waiting expectantly,
do you have the person that owns that bike? so we end up taking them out to supper.
Oh, nice.
You know, and it turns out that he and she who are traveling in the RV, they're both in their 70s.
Uh-huh.
Both of their spouses have died.
Oh.
And the four of them had been friends for like 40 years.
Oh, wow.
And they and the two remaining people end up getting together.
Because they've been that close.
In a little love story.
For so long. Yeah. Interesting.
So isn't that nice?
That is sweet.
I mean,
yeah.
Anyway.
Yeah, so no, that's
beautiful. Very positive RV story.
Right, right. Yeah, there are some good drivers out there after all.
Anyway.
Yeah, and they know how to get rid of a cramp.
I am thankful to that man.
Yeah. Well, Jerry, thank you for coming in and joining us. We really appreciate it. Do you have enough time to stick around for the news?
Sure.
Excellent. Well, let's hit that news, shall we?
Let's do that.
Yeah.
Let me
again. If people want to find you, first of all, if people want to get involved with any sort of citizen advocacy, where would you point them?
Oh, I think the premier place, of course, is the BTA.
Okay.
You know that
the Bicycle Transportation Alliance, BTAOregon.org.
Exactly. That was a training ground for me. I was on the legislative committee for a number of years. That really helped me understand Salem. It really turned me on to a number of issues that were coming up. As you know, the BTA has trained many, many people throughout, you know, over the past 20, 30 years. So I think that's a great entrance place.
Yeah.
I think Thousand Friends is another place.
Right, right.
To really pay attention to what's happening to our state.
Yeah, we talked to Miki Blizzard with Thousand Friends,
oh, yeah.
And she had that great story of defeating the West Side
Slayer.
Highway. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I think attending any of the advocacy committees that we have in Portland, in Beaverton, around the state, Bend has commute options, you know, which could use volunteers. There's all sorts of places that people could really attend and showing up and being vocal. I mean, it's so critical.
Yeah.
It makes such a huge difference. But you have to prepare yourself to constantly do it.
Right.
You can't just show up for one vote.
You work this into the fabric of your life. Right. If you are an advocate, then it's not a full-time job, but it's a consistent commitment.
I think more than a commitment, it's making a relationship with the people that are making decisions.
Mm-hmm.
So they get to know your face.
Yeah.
And they get to know what you think. I think that's the big issue.
Yeah. And it's worth
it. It's making the relationship with people who are deciding where your dollars are going to go. So it's not just protesting. It's not just being a white knight charging in and we're going to do this. We want to do this. It's really talking to people and getting them to change the priorities.
Yeah.
You know, because we have fixed dollars.
Right.
And we need more percent of those dollars. It's really that simple.
Yeah.
And that's changing the priorities. It's not necessarily us against them. It's really evolving the priorities.
Sure. Yeah. And this is something that applies no matter where you live. Anywhere you are, this is something you can do.
Definitely.
Excellent. And again, Zelada.com.
Yeah.
Zelada.
Yeah.
.com.
Yeah.
All right.
Cheers.
Fantastic. Well, let's do some news.
What can compare with the thrill of a brand new bike?
I like my bike. It's fast. I like my bike. It's fast. I like my bike. It's fast. It circles around the city lights.
From Bike Portland, Skamania Transit offers bike-friendly weekend service starting a few days ago.
Yes, and I am so excited about this.
Starting May 1st, as bike tourism booms in and around Mount Hood and the Columbia River Gorge areas, there's a growing interest in transit service. With a reliable way to integrate transit into a bike trip, people can reach destinations that are further away and complete longer loops, all without the hassle and expense of using a car.
That's right.
The Oregon West End Transit Bus, or WET for short, offers service from Fisher's... Are they really officially calling that?
They're calling it West End Transit.
All right. Offers service from Fisher's Landing, just 15 miles northeast of downtown Portland, to Carson, Washington. The WET already runs Mondays through Fridays and will expand to 7 days a week service, again, a few days ago.
Yeah.
In addition to the weekend travel option, the other great news for bicycle riders is that the buses are equipped with bike racks.
Yeah.
And Richard says they'll even accommodate some bikes inside the bus if the racks are full. Skamania County Public Transportation website has full details and has just posted the full seasonal schedule. Fares are only $2 one way.
Yeah, this is super exciting because I've taken that bus once. I think Adele and I took our summer trip out into the woods. We got off at Carson, then we rode up the Wind River Valley and into the wilderness from there. But just so freaking cool. You can do this. You can take this bus 7 days a week now, and they've added stops at major outdoor recreation areas. So like a lot of the hiking options and that sort of thing, like you can get there. Also, Carson, home to at least two breweries I'm aware of.
Yeah.
One of them makes not mead, but like a beer made with honey.
Like honey beer.
Yes, yeah. Yes. So I gotta get out there, and now I can.
Yay. All right, from TriMet, ride around Washington Park free. Line 83 weekend service begins May 3rd, 2 days ago. Line 83 Washington Park Loop weekend service begins May 3rd. Visit the zoo, the Rose Garden, the Portland Children's Museum, and the Japanese Garden, among other Washington Park attractions. During the summer of 2014, rides around Washington Park on Line 83 are free, sponsored by Portland Parks and Rec. Oh, what a bunch of nice people over
yeah,
there.
Yeah, yeah. And I was trying to remember if it was free in previous years or not. I cannot remember.
I don't remember it being specifically free.
But the important
I've
point
never
is...
I really sought it out.
Yeah.
Either.
This year, free. You
this
can ride
year it.
It
is.
Yeah.
Man, how awesome is that?
Yeah. That was actually one of the first buses I rode in Portland, I think. Cause,
really?
Yeah. When I moved here for college, my mom and my grandpa came down to like, you know, kind of see me in, and it was we took the MAX. It was the first time I'd ever taken light rail. I was super excited. Trains, you know.
Yeah,
I was a yeah. I've been a train nerd all my life.
Speaking of trains, incidentally,
yes,
this Saturday.
Oh yes, National Train Day.
Yes.
Oh man, so good, so good.
It's we've got Brock's that, Christmas.
We've got that rail museum too. That the one that's down by Omsey that I haven't seen yet. So I need to go.
There's a ride starting there.
Yeah,
this Saturday.
Yeah.
So
yes, I'm stoked.
You should go there, Brock.
I should.
Buses run about every 20 minutes between 10 a.m. and 7 p.m.
Oh, yeah. So they're easy to catch as well.
Yeah.
Let's see. I feel like there was at least one more thing I wanted to mention here. And it is, Aftermath, the documentary.
Oh, yes.
That's coming up. It's the one that Joe Beal produced. It's about the critical mass movement in Portland, and that's the opening is very soon. So we got a link on our website to
at the Clinton Street
at the
Theater?
Clinton Street Theater. Yeah, right you can on. Get your tickets for it there. Oh yeah, and a bunch of people sent me this No Tech magazine. There was an 8-wheeled cargo hauler that was this beautiful cargo pedal powered machine. 8 bicycle wheels, big platform.
Really?
Bunch of stuff on it. So yeah, there's a link up on
I didn't
up for
get
that
to see
too.
That.
Yeah, I'll show you later.
Okay.
It's fantastic.
Awesome.
Yeah. We got some mail.
Do we?
So, you know, we should do this though. Oh. We should do this.
We got mail. Hey, we got mail.
You know, I've been meaning to ask where you found the music for that.
Oh, that's a home composition.
You made that.
Yeah, put the key of your voice.
I kind of feel honored that you took the time to do that.
Hey, man, MIDI makes everything happen.
Eric from Portland. I've been loving the podcast when I'm traveling outside the state for work. It keeps me in a Portland state of mind and gets me excited to get back home and go biking. Question for you. I've been starting to do some longer cycling days, and it seems when I go above 40 miles, I get some hot spots or saddle sores. This unchecked aggression will not stand, man. I'd love to hear some tips on your favorite bike shorts and chamois creams, etc. Chamois creams.
Thing is, I don't use it, and I don't think you use it either, do you?
Chamois cream?
Yeah.
I call it sweat.
Oh, right, okay.
Can I
was about to ask Jerry, do you have some wisdom on this topic? Because I don't think Aaron and I know anything about it.
Well, I'd say buy a leather saddle.
Yeah?
And just tough it out.
But okay.
Because the leather is very forgiving, whereas, mm-hmm. you know, a lot of the saddles are, they're a piece of plastic, and then they lump a bunch of stuff on top of it.
Right.
That eventually gets compressed. And then you're back to putting your pubic bones,
right?
You know, your hip bones onto a piece of plastic.
Yeah.
Whereas with a leather, it's always moving, forgiving. It takes some time to get used to it.
You've got to be nice to your pubic bones.
It takes some time for it
yeah.
to get used to you.
And again, you know, I actually bought a new saddle, as I kind of intimated. My old saddle died.
Yes.
So I bought this saddle, Colt. It's by a
Brooks.
By Brooks.
Ah. Yeah.
It's a very thick piece of leather.
Okay.
And I thought, oh, this will last longer than I've got left.
Right.
In terms of years.
This will be my last saddle.
However, I endured it for a year and a half.
Uh-huh.
It had no give.
Really?
Oh, really?
But, again, I put it in a bucket of water as suggested by the 1970s guys from Connecticut.
Okay.
And then I rode it up Rowena Crest and down to Mosier and then...
In the Columbia River Gorge.
In the Columbia River Gorge. And by golly, by the end,
yes,
it sort of looked like my old saddle.
There we go.
It's got a little bit of St. Helens on the right and a little bit of Mount Jefferson on the left.
There we go.
And forget the cream, forget the chamois, make it your own.
Okay.
And I think leather is really the best option.
See, that's what I would also say, and that's what Grant Peterson would say. And actually, thanks to Logan and Tammy, when they stopped by here, they left the Grant Peterson book.
Oh, yeah.
And it's here somewhere, and I don't remember where it ended up in this room. Or maybe Adele took it with her to read.
Oh, damn.
But yes. But yeah, leather, I think, is a great option. I think it's one of the best if you want to wear regular clothing. And again, there's probably a bunch of people just like taking to their keyboards to write angry emails at this very moment. Yeah. And I'm sure all of them will have advice on what you should use if you want to wear a chamois and use butter and such.
When it comes to any kind of question like that, I always go to Sheldon Brown.
Ah, yes. He was a god among men.
So, yes.
Now he's a god among gods.
Yeah. Yes.
Thankfully, he's still available on the web.
That's true, yes. Yeah, he left his... He uploaded his consciousness, basically.
So, yeah, go to the Sheldon Brown website for, like, any kinds of, like, advice like that. And there's a number of things that I took from that concerning saddles is, one, it's a saddle and not a seat.
Ah, yes.
So, you know... If you get sore, it kind of means maybe you're putting more weight on your ass than you should.
Ah, yes.
It could mean that you just need to build up your legs, or it could mean that, you know, maybe you're sitting wrong, or it could mean that you need a new saddle.
Well, and you know, fitting becomes a real aspect. And once you see a lot of riders, you realize, you know, bring up your seat, you know, put it down, you know, change the handlebars, you know, so that's a real aspect too.
Yeah, certainly.
Is making it comfortable and also I think giving yourself permission to try moving things on your bike.
Yeah.
You know, I think that sort of in art is the same question. Give yourself permission to do something. But changing the bike is okay.
Oh, definitely. I don't know. I would suggest as far as like setting up a bike, I would be very reluctant to say to somebody, yeah, just leave whatever's on there, like as it comes out of the bike shop.
It'll be fine. Yeah.
You know, I think for anybody,
your legs are meant to be sore.
Right. Well, I mean, everybody's body is different.
Right.
So there's going to be some tweaking and moving and whatever. Another thing I was going to say to back up the whole leather thing is, you know, from that website is, I think he verbatim says anybody on the saddle for more than like 30 miles a day, you want a leather saddle. Now, I don't have a leather saddle right now.
Yeah, yes.
I may get one. I don't know. I'm really satisfied with my synthetic.
Oh, yeah.
That I got out of a free box, no less.
Again, yes.
But, you know, that took me all through Big Sur.
It did.
And the only like real soreness I got was mostly because my underwear rode up and I didn't do anything about it.
Oh, yes.
And it just kept rubbing. And that's more than I probably should have shared.
So it wasn't a new tattoo.
No, it was not.
But it felt like one.
But yeah, I personally love the cutouts on mine. You know, it has the whole like space in the center. And so if I ever get another one, I definitely would go for that. I suggest that for anybody, but I mean,
yeah,
you do fine with what you got. And
yeah, well, I'm a big advocate of leather as well.
Yeah.
I have not tried. I know I have, like, somebody gave me like 2 sample size packets of chamois butter a long time ago, and they've remained sealed for like 5 or 6 years, and I don't know if they're still good. Haven't ever used them. I would say that they're coconut oil is a fantastic lubricant for many things. And if you want a natural sort of thing to kind of reduce chafing and friction on your body parts, that that is a good option.
Yeah.
So
I incidentally landscaped with a guy who swore by olive oil down his crack.
Really?
Yeah.
Fascinating.
Just with the sort of sloping of the land, you know, near the beaches and all the walking and pushing of mowers that we did throughout the day, he said like it was what kept him going
right
days.
And I think any natural material is probably better than some synthetic thing that you're going to buy and squeeze out of a tube.
Sure.
So yeah.
Well, there's also you know, cornstarch. I know when I was in Pennsylvania, it was like the height of humidity and heat.
Ah, yes.
And I just dumped cornstarch, you know, into my crotch.
Right.
And that helped with the moisture.
Really?
Yeah. Kind of soak up some of the excess.
Yeah, it was very comforting.
Interesting.
So, you know, there's all sorts of different lotions. There's corn huskers lotion. There's olive oil. You know, any of those things that are really comforting to moisturizing and lubricating the skin are really going to be welcomed.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
So
your body will thank you.
Yeah.
I was thinking about this earlier and I was actually wondering if Astroglide would do any good. and then of course we're all men in this room, so we're not speaking to any of the things that, that women might deal with in their own physiology and anatomy. So if any listeners have any comments, you know, everybody send your angry emails in now.
Sure.
Yeah.
Like I said, trouble's a form of attention.
That's right.
Next up, Doug on Surly Snobs. I loved these photos he sent.
Yeah.
I've been an owner of a Surly Pugsley since June of 2006. Of the bikes I own, it's the one that puts a smile on my face every time I ride it. It's nice to see others learning that I really thought they never catch on there for a while. I went 6 years without seeing another one on my local trails that I ride. In the latest podcast, I learned that I'm also a Surly Snob, and I didn't even know it. Dang it, it's trying to connect. Okay.
Oh, sorry about that.
No, it's okay. Not only do I put personalized decals on my Surlys, I even had one painted a different color. I had a cross check modified to run a belt drive, renamed it a belt check, and had a decal made to reflect that.
Which is pretty fantastic. We should post those photos up so people can see it.
I would like to see a photo of the belt drive.
Yeah,
on the cross check there.
I think you might have sent that. I'll see if I've got it. I'll
dig
it up for you.
The email.
Okay.
All right. Next on bike movies.
Oh yeah.
Ryan, to help pass the winter in Georgetown, Ontario, I spin in my basement. Not as hardcore as your Alaskan friend. If you have ever done this, you know it is extremely boring. So I moved my bike in front of the TV and started watching bike-related movies while I pedaled. I watched all of the movies you discussed and more. BMX Bandits. Nicole Kidman's first movie was my favorite. Brock, you need to watch Pee-wee's Big Adventure.
Yes, I do.
Did you know that it was Tim Burton's first movie? I did know that, actually.
Yeah, but it's easy to forget.
Yeah, it's easy to forget that it's a Tim Burton movie at all. Yeah.
Right.
If you can picture it in darker colors and without the silly laugh, it has a lot of similarities to Edward Scissorhands. Don't believe me? Compare the opening breakfast machine in Pee-wee's Big Adventure to the machine in Edward Scissorhands.
Fascinating.
And
then Chris also sounded off because people like bike movies.
I have a weird obsession with cycling movies. So you guys were killing me with all the confusion on the last episode.
Just screaming at his earbuds.
Come on! Quicksilver. Kevin Bacon as the messenger with Paul Rodriguez as the guy who wants to buy a hot dog cart. Oh, Paul. American Flyers stars Kevin Costner and Kevin Costner's mustache as a pro cyclist. Breaking Away, set in Bloomington, Indiana, has Dennis Quaid and Daniel Stern, among others, in it. Out of those, I'd say Breaking Away is the best, but I think a weekend marathon of all of them may be in order.
Except
that's what
we'll
do for our 200th episode.
There you go. We'll just watch movies.
Just watch all these movies.
Perfect.
And record us commenting on them.
Just like a commentary?
Yes.
We should do a running
commentary,
dude.
But nobody actually sees the movie.
Let's do this. Let's do a running commentary. We'll put them up as MP3s.
Oh, we will lose our listeners.
Oh, no, no. I mean, we'll put them up somewhere secret.
Okay.
Yeah.
So can I ask a question?
Yes.
So are there people that talk about foreign movies?
Like foreign bicycle movies?
Yeah.
I bet there are.
I'm sure there are.
I mean, we haven't heard about them yet.
I have not seen one.
Well, the Bicycle Thief is probably one of the most famous,
yes,
bicycle-oriented movies. So
that's
certainly
high on the list.
There somewhere.
Yeah.
There's a number of Japanese films from the 1950s that feature bicycles as moving stories. I mean, the bicycle is a conduit.
Right.
Oh, okay.
So those are kind of interesting. Yeah. There's a postal man, something like that. It's kind of a comedy about a poet living in Italy, and the guy rides his bicycle and delivers this, these love letters. But
nice.
Certainly the bicycle is the vehicle, literally.
Yeah.
So there's all sorts of foreign bicycles. I mean, it doesn't have to be all these racing movies.
No, right,
no offense,
yes,
to Kevin Costner.
Well, racing and messengers, and you and I are neither one of those.
I sometimes relay messages.
And sometimes you race.
sometimes I race those messages.
Right, right. Sometimes we erase the messages. What was the last one? I was thinking of, The Bicyclists. It was a little small independent production from here in Portland. And I believe I own it on DVD.
Really?
That was pretty decent. Yeah, it was a lot of the folks that were involved in the Livewire radio crew from like back in 2006, I think.
Long before my time.
Yeah, but it was a decently put together production. And there's actually, the movie was the second incarnation. The first was a web series of kind of more like short comedic little bursts of bicycling themed video. But yeah, that was a pretty good film. So there's all kinds of bike movies. Send us yours.
I mean, if you want.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, we can't advocate for that on the radio. And then lastly,
from the path less pedaled,
and everybody else said this to me.
Really?
Yes.
Yeah, I figured so.
Yeah.
Tall bike, video bombs, flash flood.
Yeah, this great video of,
I watched this clip too. Yeah.
Ladies reporting on the fact that there's a flood in flood stage waters. And this guy on a tall bike just rides right by behind her through the
flooded waters.
Hey, mom. Yeah. So anyways, good times. Well, that's been a good show. Should we wrap it up?
It has.
All right.
We shall in a couple minutes.
Yeah. Like the Jackson 5, I never can say goodbye.
Never can say goodbye. Thanks. That's going to be in my head all night.
I'll lend you the 7-inch.
Oh, thanks. Find us on the internet at thesprocketpodcast.com. Send feedback about the program and suggestions for topics and or guests. Write to us via email. The address is thesprocketpodcast@gmail.com. Call and leave us a message, especially if your name is Kelly, or text to us at 503-847-9774. Connect with us on Twitter at Sprocket Podcast. Thanks to Ryan J. Lane for providing our theme music. Thanks to Hurt Bird for our headline sounder. And thank you to sustaining donors Logan Smith, Shadowfoot, Katharina Mellengard, Roger Grigsby, Wayne Norman, and Justin. Thank you all so much.
Yeah. But the thing is, yeah, I don't even know what I was going to say now. Doesn't matter. Tell you what, I'll play the voicemail later. Yeah, I'm getting distracted in my own head by it. If you have time, we're going to go over a little bit of news and a little bit of mail. So you're welcome to stay for that if you have time or if you want to, or if not, you're also.
Okay.
Yeah, that's your decision point, your watershed point.
All right.
We've got that.
Oh, there's somebody outside.
Showing the property.
I thought that was you. I didn't realize like you were still standing.
No,
there.
I thought it was like an iPod or something, or I don't know. I was like, where's that voice coming from? It's coming from outside.
You hope they're outside voices.
Yeah, well, you never know. Sprocket Studios production.